last reading of the year, and I think it's probably going to be one of the most interesting. Bruce Ackley, who is known, of course, from the Rovo Saxophone Quartet. I think the chronicle said three poets, but he's a musician, as you would expect.
You wouldn't want to confuse the two.
And I believe Rovo is playing tomorrow night at the San Francisco
Center for New Music.
So if you want to see the whole quartet tonight, he's solo, obviously. Clark Coolidge, who, as you know, has read here many times. We are always happy to welcome him back. One of America's great poets, I think. This is also kind of a book launch for a book by Jason Weiss. A book called Cloud Therapy, which is on swimming. And if you don't have to be a swimmer to enjoy this, the beautiful prose of this book. I hope you pick one up on your way out. So I'm not sure what's going to happen here, but here we have Jason Weiss, then Bruce Ackley, then Clark Coolidge.
Oh, as you listen. I went back to what I hate.
I think I'm going to dispense with the microphone. Can you hear me back there?
You're good.
Hey, Michael. Hey, Joe. I'm pretty good at speaking loudly. I've been swimming, well, now about 30 years, and I forget why I took it on, but just basically I knew that sooner or later I had to start doing some exercise, and grew up across the street from the ocean, but never was into it. My parents made me take swimming every year, and you know. So finally, when I was about 29 or so, I started doing it, and one of the many things that keep coming through in this, they're short pieces in this book, is I don't think of it as a sport for myself, I don't think of it as this, sort of a discipline, practice, but basically this will be part of what I read, I swim a mile, I do it like 40 minutes, and I'm just going back and forth. And so after enough years, it's like, you know, my mind is always wandering, and as one does when you're in something like that. And I'm a writer, it's about time I start trying to write about it. And okay, what do I do with it? And gradually I got to some sort of form I felt was comfortable. And I started making a whole list of, I don't know, themes or notes or ideas or notions of where my mind goes. Some of it is memoir-like, some of it is sort of speculation. And tonight I'm going to actually read the first piece and the last piece and a few pieces in between. So you'll get a sense of the different kinds of, let's say, meditations, shall we say. What are the great measurements of time, of distance, but tools with which to imagine our own experience? As a child, I knew that we lived an hour and a half from New York City, 60 miles, a couple of TV shows, perhaps the length of a baseball game. Later, as a teenager in California, I knew that we were half an hour from San Francisco and yet an hour's flight from LA. Driving in the Bay Area of the 1970s, that was a mere 15 miles over local roads, the freeway, the Bay Bridge, though from airport to airport, some 400 miles. Later still, in my footloose Paris years, I came to consider practically every distance I covered in the city from one point to another, whether on foot or by metro or bus, as taking half an hour. Of course, I was often late and even sometimes early. But as ever, distance was measured above all by time. Accurately or not, it was the experience of moving through that distance, whatever the means of my locomotion. Living in Brooklyn these 20 plus years now, I figure that in my lifetime I have swum the equivalent of from here to Salt Lake City. What does that mean? I first took up swimming as a discipline early in 1985, or was it the end of the previous year, at the age of 29. By the summer, I had managed to work my way up to swimming a mile without stop, doing the crawl. There I have remained ever since, occasionally swimming further, depending on the circumstance, but as a general rule, I thought a mile was enough. Nor was I ever concerned about speed. Far as I was concerned, past attaining a certain reasonable pace, speed was completely pointless. Eventually, I reached a time of about 40 minutes to the mile. It felt as natural as my particular walking pace when left to my own devices. And that was one of the great discoveries about swimming for me, self-evident though it may be. By the very nature of the medium, you had only your own devices, and I liked that simplicity. Swimming is a constant measure, like a metronome, internally generated, conditioned by the elements of water, body, air. It is also a measuring without end, spinning out figures, ratios, relationships, and changing perspectives. First and most immediate, the language of numbers asserts in its ineffable domain in a continuous shifting of values. Distance covered, distance remaining, in absolute numbers, fractions, inversions of terms, modular frequencies, comparative velocities, in and out of phase. I have swum in pools of different lengths where the magic number of how many laps to the mile totaled 48, 64, 72, even 32. When I say laps, I'm counting them in one direction, when what at least one lifeguard insists are really lengths. A lap, he says, is there and back, round trip, and that makes sense, but nonetheless, I cling to my use of the word. And habituated as I am to swimming pools, to the chlorine scrubbing in and out of my body, its detergent smell on my arms later in the day, when I've swum in ponds and across inlets of the sea, curiously, I can only measure distance by the time it takes me to swim a certain path. An unreliable calculation, to be sure, though aided by certain estimates of a roughly parallel route along the shore. The numbers games, for me, are among the necessary and inevitable amusements while my head goes soaring through the water for the span of those 40 minutes. Four laps down, not just 68 more to go, nearly an untenable number, but also 1/18th gone, which is still to say a long way yet to go, while cranking up the growing spin of numbers. Thus, rounding the turn from 8 laps entering into the ninth is also to mark a larger advance, from 1/9th to 1/8th of a mile, and soon almost 1/7th. The play of fractions accelerates from there, while the proximity of denominators expands and contracts almost with every turn. At 24 laps, that's 1/3 of the distance covered, a few minutes since reaching a quarter mile, and more than 6 minutes before the 3 collapses to 2 for half a mile. But in between, there's 27 3/8, which not only begins to sound substantial, but also rings one of those bells of other values. Since I swim a mile in 40 minutes, and the pool in question is 72 laps, that makes 9 laps every 5 minutes, and so 27 laps is also 15 minutes. And there is a further set of nodal points that have their own resonance. Since I first took to swimming as a regular discipline while living in Paris, I also took on the habit of thinking in kilometers. So that 45 laps, what remains to swim after those 27, also rings in my head as a kilometer. It's another measure of distance that plays quietly under the surface, like an alternate alphabet. But how is it that numbers can have any relation to water? At least in a swimming pool, they seem to mold each other into the same mixed medium, bound by the hard edges of the basin that contains them, that lends bounce to their constant play. Just as the water sloshes about there, starting with the first human body plying its orderly or disorderly path, so the numbers unseen jostle and slosh and change places constantly in their hapless and slippery perspectives of measurement. Of merriment, too, perhaps, though that may be one of our special attachments to numbers, the idea that they are without emotion, hence no merriment or melancholy either. Yet I've never quite understood, are numbers man-made or simply discovered as a language of deep structure to the world, regardless of the human presence? If man-made, or at least conceptualized by the human mind, do numbers then carry some trace of the emotional stamp that marks the curious creatures that we are? I suppose giddy or garrulous, so many numbers rolling about with their boisterous party in the pool might leave no room for us swimmers. Then again, numbers are abstract, are they not? Whereas water, of course, is, well, not concrete, but tangible, sort of. The length of a pool, not just for swimmers, but for the water that fills it as well, represents a unit, a singular instance before an implied repetition. That singular instance for the swimmer is multiplied however many times a person decides, by will or weariness, its oneness unfolding and unfolding again. As for the water, any containment is always provisional, ever challenging the very instinct to measure, for its own inclination in the long run is to join with the wide, immeasurable sea. All right, well, there's a poet I know in Brooklyn who, well, in New York, who he never ended up getting the book, but he writes more on music for I think it's a monthly magazine, and he was saying if there's anything in music in here, he can write on it. So I, even though he didn't end up getting the book from the publisher, I did point out that there are a couple of things with music, and this one
is one.
Dare I leave it unclosed? We'll see. That bottle. This morning, swimming my laps, a song floated into consciousness. I kept trying to sing this, but I'm not sure of the last note. So I'd love to get you on a slow boat to China, all to myself, alone. What it was doing there, why that song and not another, I have no idea. As though borrowed from a dream somewhere, or from a particular scene in a play or movie that I saw in the recent past. I could almost picture it, the ironic tone, the moonlit reverie. Not so often do specific tunes enter my thoughts while swimming, but when they do, I think in large part they sail in on a rhythm. I cannot say if I swim in 4/4 time, only that it is steady, regular, constant, like walking, like breathing, as if an echo of my heartbeat. That corresponds as well to my sense of the general experience when I swim, no matter how often I've managed to do so at any given period. When I set forth in the water, I put my body on automatic pilot and let my mind wander. It doesn't matter if I'm sharing the lane with other swimmers. I see them ahead or behind. They hardly affect my pace. That steady rhythm of my limbs, my breathing, not overly fast nor slow, would seem to underlie most any song. Yet it is only a certain tone of thought, of memory, or mood, or atmosphere that mysteriously calls forth a specific song while I swim. And even then, it may soon fade away, or linger stubbornly, past all reason. When walking along the street, I often take to whistling a tune made up on the spot to match my steps, or I'll start with a familiar tune and soon veer off. But the frequency of such tunefulness, though propelled by my own internal mechanical rhythms, does not arise quite so much when my head is in the water, as if air were a crucial element in that peculiar alchemy. I once made an experiment in that regard, which I have at moments repeated. While I swam, I tried to hum a certain melody. I think it may have been one of those great emboldening melodies played by the South African jazz groups that I love, as if the music could grant me renewed strength and I might swim many miles. Right away, it became clear that I could not hum with my head in the water and keep up my usual rhythm of breathing. That humming, with its small way of projecting sound out beyond my head, required precious oxygen, which meant less for me as I swam. I had thought that that tuneful buzzing, the humble vibration into sound emanating from the closed mouth, might be produced irrespective of inhaling or exhaling. But that was just as well. Imagine a pool, a pond, a sea, full of swimmers humming away, the cacophony. All right, what's next? It's a shorter one. One of the great metaphysicians of time, Marcel Proust, wrote how some days are as though mountainous and we struggle to get through them, while others seem all downhill and we just fly along. Swimming too can be like that. There are days I'm convinced that my pace is slower than usual. I feel the effort more, whether because I didn't sleep as well or I've been eating too much or who knows. And yet I discover when passing other swimmers whose pace I'm familiar with or afterwards glancing at the clock, that I did my mile in roughly the same 40 minutes as always. The same in clock time, perhaps, though not in my muscles and limbs, in the feeling of resistance offered by the water. But is the resistance itself ever any different? I suppose if a number of vigorous swimmers were all paddling away in there with me, it might require more effort to ply my own dogged path, or if the water temperature were markedly off from the norm. No, surely it is the feeling that varies, probably more than the external circumstances. And by the same token, there are days when I have the impression that my strokes are so robust, whether, again, from insufficient sleep, which has cast a sharp edge to my energy, or some special determination, or even suppressed anger, I must really be cutting through the water as if the wind were at my back. Nor is that the case either, I find. 40 minutes, give or take, remains indelibly my time. The vanity of form. Once, some years back, a woman who used to swim when I did suggested I pay more attention to getting my elbows up when lifting my arms out of the water. So, ever since, I have often been conscious to do just that. But other body parts have also stirred my recurring awareness as I try to keep all the elements working in smooth, well-proportioned, and synchronous movements. That is one advantage to maintaining a steady pace, rigorous yet unhurried. Others may sprint past me, I don't care. Most often when I watch them pass, it is easy to see in their headlong rush, the sloppy lurch, the lumbering commotion, the gangly and unsymmetrical clattering of limbs, hauling the body forward any old way, the sooner the better. A quiet voice inside me shakes its head at yet another, hell-bent and heedless, all fury and no form. I have sometimes imagined, instead of the randy playboy or sex kitten in their specially outfitted bedroom, that it might be nice, or instructive, or amusing, or distracting, to swim in a pool with a mirror along one side. You were wondering where I was going with that until I got to the mirror. Lacking that, other swimmers are my mirror. Or rather, seeing what their movements are wanting in harmony, or efficacy, or just proportions, I may better reflect on my own. Even if I cannot see my body's movements, I can feel them in some probable approximation of how they really are. A particular point of focus is my legs. How many swimmers have I seen, fast or medium-paced, whose legs trail like lost appendages, kicking well below the surface of the water, hardly in sync with each other, like two passengers who might or might not be riding on the same body? Every sighting of such travesties of form is another reminder for me, though my legs usually cooperate nicely even when I forget about them, as I often do. Maybe I'm lucky in that respect. When I do think of them, I can feel my feet already kicking at the surface of the water, legs extended more or less straight and working like scissors. I can feel the air on my heels and the kind of turbulence my kicking causes there at the surface, which is different than in the thicker medium below. Where I have to pay attention, though, and here the mirror of others also helps, is sometimes, instead of my legs facing parallel to the bottom of the pool, they swivel a bit to left or right, according to the side on which I am lifting my head out for breath. I should be turning only my neck, the minimal gesture necessary for taking a breath. Another point on form, though how it applies to my own swimming and walking, I cannot know, short of extensive use of cameras or eyewitnesses, I've often noticed a substantial discrepancy between a swimmer's floppy or ungainly style, asymmetrical at the very least, even what might be seen as the expression of a certain personality, and that same person's bearing when walking from the pool or to the locker room. All the more so once clothes have been put back on and the person is walking through the lobby or out on the street. This is certainly not always the case, but many times the difference is striking enough in the smooth or unsmooth fluency of movement through water and over the ground that I am inclined to think our swimming is never entirely natural in the way that our walking is, that whatever balance and symmetry and grace and economy we may achieve in our ability to move through water is due to a particular kind of learning, not as a result of becoming Homo erectus, but in reaching toward another, possibly more ancient model. And doing so, we contrive, as it were, a sort of borrowed form. Yeah, this is essentially relating to sensory deprivation, I guess. But unplugged, disconnected, unreachable, unavailable, off the grid. The medium of water, so easy to enter, but like a door that shuts silently behind you, imperceptible. A particular kind of departure, personal and absolute in a way, solitary. When I'm with my family somewhere and I go off swimming, even if they go swimming too, my wife nearby, perhaps even my daughter, while my son eagerly shares my lane or chooses to partake of a like trajectory, I am nonetheless in a realm of my own. Once I launch forth, my head immersed all the more so in a pond or the sea where the sides are much further apart, no one can get through to me. My departure lasts as long as I choose and cannot be interrupted by others except through great effort. There is a certain magic in this act, as well as a kind of danger, almost within reach, in plain sight if others are looking, and yet so far from things outside, walled off by the sound of water washing in my ears, that the world could have changed immeasurably while I was away. In this regard, just as there is always the chance we might not come back any time we depart, I almost feel like I should say goodbye when I go off to swim. Will you still be there? Will I? But let's not get carried away. Okay, two more pieces. Oh, yes, this is another sound-related one. What do you hear while swimming? One might well consider each of the senses in such circumstances, for swimming is a kind of obstacle condition where the normal operation of the different senses is blocked or altered, even subverted. As when one is blind, say, and the other senses bend and compensate and take over some of the territory that was left unthinkingly to sight. Water is our darkness instead, if that analogy is not already excessive, which suggests that if such was our primordial state, the senses we practically take for granted once served us in other ways. We might equally ask, what can we hear with our faces in the water? How does sound reach us, and which sounds? Always the sloshing in the ears, our heads carried forth in a perpetual wash cycle. It's amazing how quickly these sounds rinse out from the resonant bowl of our skulls as soon as we stand up out of the water. But other sounds come through too, depending where we are swimming. First, inescapable, there is the sound of our own breathing. Not so much when we inhale, it turns out, catching the air in our mouths directly from the sky. Rather, it is the action of the air pushing out from nose or mouth in a channel through the water. That much we hear. At the Eastern Athletic Pool, the club where I go, there is not so much else in the immediate vicinity except the accumulated splashing of other swimmers. Although, once in a while, there is this to penetrate even the most obvious ears, a loud siren, some say from the sauna for some reason, yet each time I think of it as a fire drill. Swimming my laps as the siren goes on for a couple of minutes, I keep watch to see who will stop and get out until I'm the only one left swimming. How is the fire going to reach me in the water? What will it feed on along the tiled sides? Except no one does stop. We all ignore it. And since when are fire drills for grown-ups? Still, I'm amused by the thought of us all parading outside in our swimsuits as though our real identities would thus be revealed. At other pools, though, other spots to swim, a different resonance holds, and so a distinct sonic recipe may reach my ears while my head is immersed. Outside, like at the Claremont, where people lounge about in row upon row around the pools, I might imagine splinters of conversations that fly off unpredictably in my direction while I swim. But the fact is, the voices would have to be quite close by, standing about in the next lane, it happens, for me to hear them. Instead, without a roof overhead, birdsong and the faint roar of jet planes filters through when I tilt my ear out, along with a particularly strident voice or even the lifeguard's whistle calling the kids to order. Above all, it is the ambient sound that is different, swimming at an outdoor pool. The sound itself has more space and dimension compared to the box that contains us inside, swimmer, pool, and all. Further outside, as it were, in a pond or the sea, even more, sonically, drops through the air to me with my head in the water. The wind through the trees, the swing and drop out from the shore of a body off a rope, gull cries, the snap of a lanyard against a mast, the low chug of an outboard motor on the small boats coming in, the slight folds of the seas, of the sea swell rubbing against each other, water upon water. But especially in indoor pools, I realize, it is the sound of my own movement through the water I hear, and the sound of others' movement nearby. To each body and each stroke, its particular contours, its sound waves. Because when I push off the side, the water flapping against my ears sounds differently, of course, than in the middle of a lap, and differently still at the beginning or end of my swim, when, head submerged, I am at rest, as is the water, sounding almost hollow, no body at all. Okay, last one. Water isn't wet, it only makes you wet. How many times did I hear that from other kids when I was growing up? Is it true, or is it rather a smarty pants distinction? Covered or soaked with a liquid such as water. That's the first definition of wet in my American Heritage Dictionary. So maybe those kids were right. Could water be covered or soaked with water? What is inside the water that would get soaked? Does it matter? When we speak of the qualities of water, in fact, the subject tends to escape us. After noting the obvious, that it is liquid, we only manage to speak like chemists or poets, or sometimes like physicists and engineers when considering its dynamic properties. The swimmer, of course, knows all these aspects from inside, wherever that inside is. Water is its particular qualities, in a particular place, at a particular time, in a particular body of water. We might even say it is the particles themselves we are looking at in the water, in that water, which makes it hard or soft, clear or murky, fresh or foul-smelling, calm or turbulent. As if the water were an essence we can only approach by way of its particular conditions. We swim in that water. We drink that water, usually not the same. As swimmers, we do have our limits, and each limit poses challenges which we might, wisely or foolishly, choose to take up. So, the water is also a kind of screen or stage, a liquid screen or stage, in which we project or play out our own personal drama. Is that what swimming laps is? Not a discipline, not an exercise, not a sport, but rather rehearsals for a play that will never have its premiere? I'm not talking of you competitive folks who swim to race. Further still, from water in its essential qualities as water, and even from the particles and particularities, we are inclined to see water more in terms of quantity, the size of the body, the depths and distances it contains. Water, it seems, is a medium for transport, for reverie, for nourishment, for getting wet. If on a molecular level, water retains a certain memory of what was diluted there, whether in a controlled environment, as for homeopathic ends, or in the reckless and ruinous expanses of so many ecological poisonings, it also carries a measure of our own memory, both collective and individual. So much water inside our bodies, and so we swim in bodies of water. By getting wet, we are joined to all the other bodies that came before and are with us still.